January 1945, the Nazi death camp at Auschwitz, located in modern-day Poland, was liberated by Soviet armed forces. Over a million people had been killed in the camp, most of them Jews. Those who survived speak of unimaginable acts of hatred and brutality carried out by the German Nazi officers who ran Auschwitz. One such man was Dr. Josef Mengele. In this programme, we hear, perhaps for the last time, the story of survivors known as the Mengele twins. Their accounts are disturbing, yet they also include moments of great courage, determination, and above all, hope.
They put us in these cattle cars and they took us to Auschwitz. Of course, in the cattle cars, people were dying as they were standing from thirst, from fright, from starvation, I don't know. I remember people standing. And they didn't fall because it was so cramped. So they just died standing up.
We were packed like sardines. There was no sanitary possibility, no food, no beverage, nothing came into our mouths until eventually we've heard the footsteps of the German officers and the yellings of the dogs.
The barking of the dogs and the Nazis shouting and yelling, "Schnell, schnell, schnell, quick, quick, quick." They didn't want us to get oriented, you know. It was sheer terror.
Vera Kriegel was deported to Auschwitz from Slovakia in 1944, aged just six. Jona Lax was sent there from the Łódź ghetto in Poland when she was only 14. Each was accompanied by their twin sister and their mother. Auschwitz was the most notorious death camp of World War II. It will forever be the monument to the Nazis' so-called final solution, the attempt to rid Germany of all its Jews.
They opened the doors of these cattle cars, and I remember who was alive went down. And all the dead people just fell off. And I remember I trod on these dead people like they were stairs. When we came to Auschwitz, and I remember they said, "Have you heard? They are going to burn us." No one could believe that a person could burn another person.
Would the arriving twins be sent straight to their deaths in the Auschwitz crematorium, or would a different fate await them? Jona Lax describes the power of Dr. Josef Mengele, who was the camp's principal doctor and research scientist.
"My elder sister did not believe that I shall be able to pass this selection. She took off her wooden shoes. She pushed them under my feet to make me look taller and pinched my cheeks so that I should get some color into my face. Mengele came and he decided to send me to the left and Miriam, my twin, to the right, which meant I was supposed to go to the crematorium. My elder sister, Hannah, when she realized that, she bent down on her knees and begged. She did not know that that was Mengele and we didn't know that name before. But she begged, she said, since we were twins, and we have never been departed till now, she begs him to leave us together. And when Mengele heard that we were twins, and I had already been gone towards the crematorium, I could see the fire through the chimneys. I could even feel the burnt flesh. But all of a sudden came an SS man and pulled me out of the line and brought me back to Mengele.
The woman came up to my mother and she said, "Are these twins you have here?" My mother said, "Yes." Because they were yelling also, "Zwillinge raus, Zwillinge raus, Zwillinge raus." Twins out of the rows, out of the rows. The twins, they were looking for twins. But this woman said, it's a good thing to have twins in this place.
Vera Kriegel. Another twin whose fate lay in the balance as the train doors at Auschwitz were hauled open was Moti Alon, a 9-year-old Hungarian boy.
Dr. Mengele.
And there we saw Dr. Mengele. We did not know his name, but he was a handsome officer, and he made a gesture with his hand. Right, left. He was selecting people. And quickly he asked if there were any twins there. My mother said, here, here, and they took us.
Mengele stood there like a lord. He thought he was God or what. He stood there with his white glove, right, left, to pick out any twins that he wanted for himself, for his experiments.
Vera Kriegel. Twins like her were installed in special barracks for Mengele's exclusive use. He showered them with toys and sweets, and they innocently called him the Good Uncle. It was an ironic nickname because soon Mengele would be better known as the Angel of Death. The generosity shown to the twins was misleading for another reason too. They weren't appreciated for who they were. Instead, their individuality was swiftly eradicated, as Moti Alon and first Menachem Bodner vividly remember.
I remember that there were three tables.
I remember there was a queue and three tables. Behind each table sat three people. One was in a uniform, one was in a white gown, and the other one, well, I don't remember now. I stood at the third queue, at the edge. Then someone came from behind, two hands grabbed me, and they marked my forearm with the number. I don't remember the pain, but I do remember the event itself.
I had this number on my arm. And from that moment, I was no longer a human being. I had no name. I had nothing.
Mengele had arrived at Auschwitz in May 1943 after being injured in the German army. He wanted to resume his pre-war experiments, which had taken place at Frankfurt University's Institute of Racial Purity. At Auschwitz, he took them to a different level, a level which alarmed the 14-year-old Jona Lacks.
Dr. Mengele, when he came into the laboratory, he used to walk up to each of his assistants asking what he's doing. And so we're eagerly listening to what he had to say. And when he said, sort of quietly to the persons who were treating us, what to do with us, we became terribly frightened. Mengele performed the most serious experiments, including operations, including taking out organs from people without anesthetic. If one of the twins felt sick or died or passed away, immediately the other twin was murdered.
Experiments Mengele conducted on the twins included amputations, punctures, and typhus injections. He intentionally infected wounds, and blood transfusions were common. But why did he go to such lengths with this specific group of children? Moti Alon was a twin who'd been deported from Hungary.
Aval, hu badak kol chelek me'ha'etzba'ot be'yad.
He examined every part of the fingers, the eyes, the colour of the eyes, and so on, what was similar and what was different. People said that he wanted to examine why twins exist, because it's a kind of defect, an error, because no one plans to have twins. But the German Reich was planned for 1,000 years, and it was in need of more and more children. And the aim was that German women would give birth to more children. That's to say, twins, triplets.
Mengele wanted to prove the Nazis' contention that the Jews were an inferior race. By doing so, he'd help realise Adolf Hitler's objective of ridding Germany of the people they saw as a threat to the health of the nation. But Mengele went further. He wanted to breed a master race of blonde-haired, blue-eyed Aryans. To achieve this aim, he needed to study how natural characteristics like the shape of heads or the colour of eyes could be changed. And it was here, Vera Kriegel recalls, that Mengele discovered reality could contradict Nazi racial theories. She and her sister were non-identical twins.
Mengele looked at us very clearly and he said, "It cannot be. Are you sure you are Jewish?" They said, "Of course I'm sure I'm Jewish." And he said, "It cannot be, it cannot be. You have perfect Aryan features. You have blue eyes, they don't have blue eyes. They are not identical." And he took his finger like this, from forehead to the nose, and from the nose to the ear. And he measured my mother's face and he said, "You have perfect Aryan features. You cannot be a Jew."
Some of Mengele's experiments treated Vera and the other twins like laboratory rats.
They took us with our mother and they put us in a real cage made of wood. Cage. There was straw on the floor, there was a bucket for whatever we had to do. And our mother, Olga, my twin sister Olga, and myself, and two other twins, around 10 years old, identical twins, were together with us in this cage. We didn't know the reason for us being in the cage. We didn't know anything, anything at all. It was very, very small, this cage. We couldn't lie down, we couldn't stand up. And for around 2 weeks, we got injections into our spine. Injections. These injections made us very, very sick. We got high fever. We would vomit. We got diarrhea. What was the purpose of these injections? We didn't know. But later we thought maybe there were chemicals or hormones, things like that.
Another step on Mengele's path towards the perfect Aryan involved testing how far he could change the pigmentation of eye colour.
We were brought to this laboratory. The door opened, told me to get in. I was looking at a whole wall of human eyes. A wall of blue eyes, of green eyes, of brown eyes. And those eyes, they were staring at me, they were staring at me, these eyes. And I couldn't cope with it. And I fell down on the floor. And I was in a shock, and they picked me up, and they put some drops into my eyes, and I remember I started shaking.
After the war, the nature of the experiments at Auschwitz came to international attention. One of the principal prosecutors at the Nuremberg trials of leading Nazis and their supporters briefly summed up what Mengele's experiments amounted to.
The true object of these experiments was not how to rescue or cure, but how to destroy and kill.
Dr. Mengele took about 120 twins and we were given injections. And after these injections, some boils popped up on our bodies. And they called this the Noma disease. And the thing was that they gave us injections to cause these boils, and they gave us other injections to get rid of the boils. Imagine how can a little child's body react to these traumas? You're not normal anymore, you're nothing. Everything is in the hands of this Mengele. He's the master of your body.
In his experiments, Mengele worked closely with an anthropological institute in Berlin. It was the destination for most of the body parts of those twins who died or were killed, from their limbs to their eyeballs. The parcels Mengele sent were stamped urgent war materials. Daily routine for Yona Lax and her fellow twins was by this point miserable as well as dangerous.
We used to come back to the barracks exhausted, frightened, hungry, deadly cold.
Death could be lying on the wooden stool right next to you.
There were three stores, wooden beds, uncovered, just wooden beds, and there were 14 people on one bed. Now, if anybody wanted to turn back or to turn right or left, everybody had to together as one because it was so crowded. I was so thin, my skin just went into the wood, just went into the skin of the back, of the side or whatever. There was never a complete rest.
Between my sister, twin sister Olga and myself, there was a friend of ours, and she was called Marika. And one morning, I shake her. I said, Marika, turn over, because I have to turn over. We couldn't sleep on our backs. We only could sleep on our side. And Marika didn't respond. I shook her, and I shook her, and I shook her, and I realized she was dead. Between Olga and myself. And dead, and I knew what dead is.
While death was everywhere at Auschwitz, the twins quickly found food was virtually non-existent.
The food we were given was some very, very like waterish soup. Most of it was full of maggots, and we had to eat it. We had no other food. Once in the day, we were given a piece of bread with a little margarine on it and some coffee. They were starving us. They were starving us. And you know this feeling of being famished? And you hurt so much. You didn't know what to do with yourself. Just, you know, it's a little piece of bread, even if it was hard as a rock or full of sand or whatever it was. You put it in the mouth and you chewed on it and you chewed on it and you chewed on it. And it was so great, the taste of bread. It was stale, but at least you had something in your mouth to chew on.
Yet despite all these deprivations, the twins could still enjoy moments of light relief. Bella Glazievina was with Menachem Bodner at one of them.
Miałam się opiekować Menachem i brat.
I looked after Menachem and his brother. I wasn't even 13 years old then. I don't remember his brother much, but I remember Menachem for one incident. Mengele was doing an inspection and stopped in front of Menachem by the stove. Mengele asked, "What's your name?" Menachem replied, "Mendele." Mengele heard it as Mengele. My heart started pounding. I thought they'd take him away. But instead, Mengele took out a sweet and gave it to him.
But these were rare interludes in the laboratories at Auschwitz. Vera Kriegel recalls that there were times when her mood and Mengele's were far uglier.
If one of the twins were missing, that he wanted an experiment, and he didn't find one of his twins, he got mad. He was like a crazy person.
And one evening, Vera kept the doctor waiting.
I knew what was waiting for me. Mengele was there. in the frame of the barracks, in the door. And he was walking to and fro and to and fro and beating on his boots. He was crazy with anger. And he threw me to the back of the barracks with a kick. I landed at the end of the barracks on the wooden floor. And I said, this is Mengele. He can do anything he wants to me. But first of all, he cannot take away my mind.
Motti Alon saw that others in the camp were not so tough-minded when publicly humiliated by Mengele.
פעם אחרת, אני באמת לא יודע מדוע, אבל היו לנו גם...
We also had a number of dwarves in the laboratories, although I wasn't sure why. One of them was Mr. Levy, who was a quadriplegic. His hands and legs did not function properly. The officers at the camp brought in a gypsy woman to the barracks one day. I guess there were some gypsies remaining in the camp. She was made to lie down on the floor. They were forced to have sex, and we all had to watch. We weren't allowed to move our heads. If someone had done that, he could have had a bullet to his head from the Germans. Mr. Levy passed away a day later. I don't know if it was from this, or if he was already very ill.
Even this experiment was eclipsed by Mengele's work in the laboratory. During the 18 months he spent at Auschwitz, Mengele killed hundreds of children. He then dissected their corpses. His objective was to understand the differences and the similarities among twins by examining their internal organs. Mengele's pathologist at Auschwitz, Dr. Miklós Nizli, recounted their approach.
For the comparative examination, from the viewpoint of anatomy and pathology, the twins had to die at the same time. So it was that they met their death at the hands of Dr. Mengele. This phenomenon was unique in world medical history. Twin brothers died together, and it was possible to perform autopsies on both of them. Where, under normal circumstances, can one find twin brothers who die at the same place and at the same time?
Even Mengele couldn't withstand the pressures which, by the beginning of 1945, were forcing the Nazis in Eastern Europe, as in the West, into retreat. Many twins, including Vera Kriegel, weren't left at Auschwitz to greet the liberators when they arrived. Instead, they were forced to join the so-called Death March with the Nazis who were fleeing the camp.
There was a whole army walking together with us and driving us. It was January, the snow was very high, cold, without clothes, with the wooden shoes. We had to run, and not knowing where to, not knowing what's going to happen. So there was no feeling of being freed.
The youngest were left behind at Auschwitz. Of the estimated 3,000 twins sent there, only 200 survived. Motti Alon was one of them.
פתאום נכנס שם חייל, אבל לא באותם המדים.
Suddenly, there entered into the camp a soldier with a uniform that was unfamiliar to us. Not German, not Hungarian, it was a different colour, and with a machine gun. I remember his image still today. He was about 16 or 17 years old. Those who could still stand in the women's barracks got up. Some of them had their shirts to their midriffs, some were naked, some had just rags, and all of them in the darkness. Just here and there, a candle flickered. They all shouted, "Ruski!" This was the first time I'd seen a Russian soldier, and this is how we were freed.
It's 70 years since the liberation of the twins from Mengele's regime at Auschwitz. Survivors ask now how much the Allies did, and how soon, to end the suffering they endured at the hands of the Nazis.
How could it happen, and how? Was it possible, and why did not the population of the world intervene sooner and let it happen for such a long time, for so many murdered people? Already 70 years have passed, which is a long time. but it is always with me. And of course, there is always the feeling, God forbid, if men could have done such a thing, the German country, a population which was an educated population, came to such a stage to perform things which the world did not know about before. That did not happen. Maybe it may happen again. And this frightens.
The speakers in this BBC documentary on the Mengele twins were Yona Lacks, Vera Kriegel, Motti Alon, Menachem Bodner and Bella Glazier-Wiener. Their testimonies were recorded by Maria Polachowska. The programme was narrated by me, Hannah Moore, and produced for radio by Simon Coates.
The BBC.